All right, let's take our Bibles and turn to the book of Nahum. And we'll be looking at Nahum and Habakkuk this morning. If you look at the little timeline on the handout on the back of it, if you can read it, it's kind of light printed there. We say Nahum is there around 700. Could be as an approximation. In any case, it seems to be after the Assyrian captivity, which was in 722 BC. And the Assyrian captivity was the Assyrian nation, the Assyrian Empire came in and destroyed and captured all of the northern 10 tribes of Israel. The kingdom of Israel was short-lived, and a united kingdom of Israel was short-lived after Solomon's death and his son's ascension to the throne. The northern 10 tribes rebelled against Rehoboam. And so you have the 10 tribes of the north in various capital cities, but finally ending up in Samaria. And then the southern two tribes, Judah and Benjamin, are the kingdom of David. David's family continues to reign there in Judea, or Judah. So you have Israel and Judah, sometimes are terms used to distinguish the two different kingdoms. Anyway, the kingdom of Israel, as soon as they separated from the southern tribes, their leader, Jeroboam, set up calf worship in Dan and Bethel. They turned away from God in that way. And not long after that, especially under the reign of Omri and Ahab, we recognize the name Ahab probably, they brought in the and wholeheartedly followed the Canaanite pagan idol worship, especially through the influence of Jezebel, Ahab's wife. Through time, God sent prophets even to them, Elijah, Elisha, others, Amos, Hosea. But they were captured and taken into captivity by the Assyrians. Nahum is, and I go through that because Nahum prophesies after the captivity of Israel. And the Assyrians basically completely, they didn't annihilate all the Assyrians, but they dispersed them thinly throughout their kingdom. And those people that were captured by the Israelites never as a people returned to the land of Israel. Others came into their place. Other Israelites moved up there. Over time, after the return of the kingdom of Judah, but the people, the tribes of Israel, the 10 tribes, were dispersed over the whole world by the Assyrian captivity. Nahum appears to be another prophet from Galilee. Now, if you know any geography, you say, how is he from Galilee? He's prophesying after the Assyrian captivity, but he's from Galilee. That should cause a question, because Galilee is in the north and completely, it's along several of those other northern tribes. Well, we don't know exactly. He was most likely from that area. He may have escaped down into Judea. He may have been one of few that were not deported, if you put it that way. There's not a lot of certainty about where he's from. We know he's an Elkoshite. That comes in the first verse. And that was this coincidence, I think, as I was riding along in the bus about a week ago. There's a little sign said Elkosh this way. So we don't know for sure if that's the town that Nahum was from, but there is a town in the Galilee called Elkosh. There's also a town in the Galilee right on the Sea of Galilee called Capernaum. And Capernaum means town of Nahum. Kapur means town. Nahum, town of Nahum. There were many Nahum, so it might not have been his town. But there's two possibilities for where he lived. The difficulty with that is that he prophesied after the captivity, and so most likely he wouldn't have been in that area when he prophesied. So it's not for sure. It's not of utmost importance to know where he's from. But it's interesting to note that he very likely from Galilee, because if we remember, the Pharisees did not, they claimed just without knowing the scriptures, as Jesus said later about them, that looked to see there's never been a prophet come out of Galilee, and so Jesus couldn't have been a prophet himself either. Anyway, he also prophesies against Nineveh, which is interesting because their other prophet from Galilee was Jonah, and he prophesied against Nineveh. In fact, he went to Nineveh and preached against it. He is about 100 years after Jonah. In the meantime, when Jonah went to Nineveh, the people all repented and turned from their evil ways, and God spared them. In the meantime, they repented of their good ways. They turned back to their evil ways and came, and God used them to destroy the people of Israel. And so about 100 years after Jonah, Nineveh, which was the capital city or one of the leading cities of the Assyrians, must be punished for their deeds. Nahum is not sent to Nineveh. He just prophesies against them, and generally the entire book is against or about Nineveh, which is kind of interesting. Nineveh was not the people of God, but they had some interaction. God used them to judge the people of Israel. The principles inside the book can of course be applied to many different situations, but I just point out that it's general. Almost the whole thing is directed toward Nineveh itself. And one thing that is for sure that we can see and gather from reading the book of Nahum is that we can see God's prophecy and the fulfillment of that prophecy. The fulfillment was soon after Nahum's prophecy. Nahum prophesied certain things would happen to Nineveh, which were kind of unthinkable when you think about the way the city of Nineveh was built and defended and all of that, and yet they came to pass just the way that Nahum said they would come to pass. And we don't have time this morning to give all the details of that, but it's definitely a help and a strength to our faith in God and in His Word that we can see a prophecy and the fulfillment of it in history. So Nineveh has three chapters, and it's a rough way to think about them. It's the first chapter, we see Nineveh's destruction is declared to happen, that it's going to happen. Nineveh's destruction in chapter 2 is detailed, the details of how it would happen. And then chapter 3, Nineveh's destruction is demanded, why Nineveh needed to be judged in this way because of the things that they had done. I know you didn't have me last week, but just a reminder, through the summer especially, as we read through these prophecies, you see Lord and Lord, and I'm substituting the word Jehovah whenever you see the word capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. That is the word Jehovah, but it doesn't sound like it if you say Lord, and it's a visual distinction that you can see as you read, but you don't hear it if you just say it out loud. So I'm just mentioning that each week we have different visitors. I'm not reading from a different version of the Bible. I'm trying to be clear, and if I don't announce it, it has been confusing. So hopefully that takes care of the confusion that will arise. Chapter 1, the burden of Nineveh, the book of the vision of Nahum the Elkoshite. God is jealous, and Jehovah revenges. Jehovah revenges and is furious. Jehovah will take vengeance on his adversaries, and he reserves wrath for his enemies. Jehovah is slow to anger and great in power, and will not at all acquit the wicked. Jehovah has his way in the whirlwind and in the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. He rebukes the sea and makes it dry, and dries up all the rivers. Bashan languisheth. And Carmel and the flower of Lebanon languisheth. Those three areas were known to be full of plenty and plenteous crops, and yet they were going to be dried up because of the destruction. And here we have, just right from the start, God says he will revenge on, he doesn't say who on yet, but on his enemies, the enemies of his people, because of the things that they have done. So he sets kind of the tone right from the start, that he avenges the evil of others. The mountains quake at him, and the hills melt, and the earth is burned at his presence, yea, the world and all that dwell therein. Who can stand before his indignation? And who can abide in the fierceness of his anger?
His fury is poured out like fire, and the rocks are thrown down by him. Jehovah is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knows them that trust in him. But with an overrunning flood, he will make an utter end of the place thereof, and darkness shall pursue his enemies. What do you imagine, or what do ye imagine against Jehovah? He will make an utter end. Affliction shall not rise up the second time. For while they be folded together as thorns, and while they are drunken as drunkards, they shall be devoured as stubble fully dry. There's one come out of thee that imagines evil against Jehovah, a wicked counselor. This is perhaps Sennacherib. You remember he sent his servant Rabshakeh to Hezekiah and said, you know, what do you think that you can depend on the Lord, because all the other gods I've been able to destroy. Perhaps that's who this is referring to. Thus saith Jehovah, though they be quiet and likewise many, yet thus shall they be cut down when he shall pass through. Though I have afflicted thee, I will afflict thee no more. For now will I break his yoke from off thee, and will burst thy bonds in sunder. And Jehovah has given a commandment concerning thee, that no more of thy name be sown. Out of the house of thy gods will I cut off the graven image and the molten image. I will make thy grave, for thou art vile. Behold upon the mountains the feet of him that brings good tidings, that publishes peace. O Judah, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee. He is utterly cast off. In chapter 2, he that dashes in pieces is come up before thy face. Keep the munition, watch the way, make thy loins strong, fortify thy power mightily. For Jehovah has turned away the excellency of Jacob as the excellency of Israel. For the emptiers have emptied them out and marred their vine branches. The shield of his mighty men is made red. The valiant men are in scarlet. The chariots shall be with flaming torches in the day of his preparation, and the fir tree shall be terribly shaken. The chariots shall rage in the streets. They shall jostle one against another in the broad ways. They shall seem like torches. They shall run like the lightnings. He shall recount his worthies. They shall stumble in their walk. They shall make haste to the wall thereof, and the defense shall be prepared. The gates of the rivers shall be opened. Just point out, this is a specific detail. All of these are details about the way that Nineveh would be overthrown. But Nineveh had a very deep, very large water moat around it. But the river that supplied Nineveh overflew its banks and broke down the barrier. Just the power of the water broke down the barrier that protected Nineveh from that river. And in that sense, the waters flowed into the city, and right behind the waters, the Babylonians flowed into Nineveh and destroyed the city with the opening that the river gave to them. Of course, God using the river to open that up for them. They felt very protected because of that large moat, but it turned out to work against them. Anyway, the gates of the river shall be opened, and the palace shall be dissolved. And Huzzab shall be led away captive. She shall be brought up, and her maid shall lead her with the voice of doves tabering upon their breasts. But Nineveh is of old like a pool of water. Yet shall they flee away. Stand, stand, shall they cry, but none shall look back. Take ye the spoil of silver, take the spoil of gold, for there is none end of the store and glory out of all the pleasant furniture. She is empty and void and waste. The city of Nineveh never came back, was never used again for hundreds and hundreds of years. Empty, void, and waste. And the heart melts, and the knees smite together, and much pain is in all loins, and the faces of them all gather blackness. Where is the dwelling of the lions? Now, Assyria portrayed its leaders as lions. So this seems to be talking about the palace of the leaders. Where is the dwelling of the lions and the feeding place of the young lions, where the lion, even the old lion, walked, and the lions whelped, and none made them afraid? The lion did tear in pieces enough for his whelps, and strangled for his lionesses, and filled his holes with prey and his dens with raven. Behold, I am against thee, saith Jehovah of hosts. I will burn her chariots in the smoke, and the sword shall devour thy young lions. I will cut off thy prey from the earth, and the voice of thy messengers shall be no more be heard.
And then chapter 3, the reasons for this destruction. Woe to the bloody city. It is all full of lies and robbery. The prey departs not. The noise of a whip and the noise of the rattling the wheels and of the prancing horses and of the jumping chariots. The horseman lifts up both the bright sword and the glittering spear, and there is a multitude of slain and a great number of carcasses, and there is none end of their corpses. They stumble upon their corpses because of the multitude of the whoredoms of the well-favored harlot, the mistress of witchcrafts that sells nations through her whoredoms and families through her witchcrafts. Behold, I am against thee, saith Jehovah of hosts, and I will discover thy skirts upon thy face, and I will show the nations thy nakedness and the kingdoms thy shame. I will cast abominable filth upon thee and make thee vile, and will set thee as a gazing stock. And it shall come to pass that all they that look upon thee shall flee from thee and say, Nineveh is laid waste. Who will bemoan her? Whence shall I seek comforters for thee? Art thou better than populous? No, this is a city that was situate among the rivers, a city in Egypt, that had the waters round about it, whose rampart was the sea, and her wall was from the sea. Ethiopia and Egypt were her strength, and it was infinite. Put and Lubim were thy helpers. Yet was she carried away, she went into captivity. Her young children also were dashed in pieces at the top of all the streets, and they cast lots for her honorable men, and all her great men were bound in chains. This had already happened. The Assyrians themselves had actually done this to the city of No. So Nahum is saying, look at what you did to them. They thought they were sitting pretty and impervious or to destruction. It's going to happen to you. Thou also shalt be drunken. Thou shalt be hid. Thou also shalt seek strength because of the enemy. All thy strongholds shall be like fig trees with the first ripe figs. If they be shaken, they shall even fall into the mouth of the eater. Behold, thy people in the midst of thee are women. The gates of thy land shall be set wide open unto thine enemies, and fire shall devour thy bars. Draw thee waters for the siege. Fortify thy strongholds. Go into clay and tread the mortar. Make strong the brick kiln. There shall the fire devour thee. The sword shall cut thee off. It shall eat thee up like the cankerworm. Make thyself many as the cankerworm. Make thyself many as the locust. Thou hast multiplied thy merchants above the stars of heaven. The cankerworm spoils and flies away. Thy crowned are as the locust, and thy captains as the great grasshoppers, which camp in the hedges in the cold day. But when the sun arises, they flee away, and their place is not known where they are. Thy shepherds slumber, O king of Assyria. Thy nobles shall dwell in the dust. Thy people is scattered upon the mountains, and no man gathers them. There is no healing of thy bruise. Thy wound is grievous. All that hear the bruit of thee shall clap the hands over thee, for upon whom has not thy wickedness passed continually? So Nahum prophesies the destruction and basically annihilation of the people of Assyria, and it did come to pass through the hand of the Babylonians or the Chaldeans. Next, let's look at Habakkuk. I think that's the next book. Habakkuk prophesies during to Judah, during the backsliding after the revival of Josiah. You've got to think real quick about your history of Israel and what you've read in the book of Kings. Josiah came to power, and there was a revival unto him, but after him the people went quickly back into idolatry, and Habakkuk prophesies during that backsliding. It's the final, basically, backsliding of the people of Judah. He sees all the wickedness of the people and the rulers and asks for God to do something about it. He says, why do I won't do something about all this wickedness around me? And God replies in a way that he doesn't really understand. And that is that a people much worse than the Israelites would punish them. God would use the Chaldeans to punish the people of Israel. And this surprises Habakkuk. He says that doesn't make sense to him because he knows his people are bad, but how can God look upon evil or use these evil people to punish his people? Chapter 2, verse 4 is quoted three times in the New Testament. You'll recognize it. The just shall live by his faith. Paul quotes it twice in the writer of Hebrews. If it's Paul, that makes it three times. But the conclusion is that God is sovereign and will do as he pleases. He can, if he wants, use wicked people to punish and draw his people back to him. But even those wicked will not go unpunished, as we'll see in chapter 2. We, regardless of what happens, regardless of the condition we find ourselves in, must live by faith. So chapter 1 and 2 is Habakkuk's dialogue with God, and then chapter 3 is the prayer of Habakkuk. So chapters 1 and 2, Habakkuk's dialogue with God. The burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. O Jehovah, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? Even cry out unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save? Why dost thou show me iniquity, and cause me to behold grievance, the things around him? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth. So those that are judging are not given good, proper judgment. For the wicked doth compass about the righteous. Therefore wrong judgment proceeds. And God answers and says, Behold ye among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously. For I will work a work in your days which ye will not believe, though it be told you. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses also are swifter than the leopards, and are more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from far. They shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to the meat, or to eat. They shall come all for violence. Their faces shall sup up as the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sand. And they shall scoff at kings, and the princes shall be a scorn unto them. They shall deride every stronghold, and they shall heap dust and take it. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing this his power unto his God. God says, I'm going to use them to do this. I'm the one that's going to give them the strength and the power to do all of this, but they will offend and impute or attribute this power that they have to their own God. And Habakkuk responds, this is, confuses him, perplexes him. He says, Art thou not from everlasting, O Jehovah, my God, my Holy One? We shall not die, O Jehovah. Thou hast ordained them for judgment, and O mighty God, thou hast established them for correction. Thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devours the man that is more righteous than he? And makest men as the fishes of the sea, as the creeping things that have no ruler over them. They take up all of them with an angle. They catch them in their net and gather them in their drag. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice unto their net and burn incense unto their drag net. Because by them their portion is fat and their meat plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continually to slay the nation? He's saying, if you allow this, they're just going to get worse and worse and worse. They don't believe in you. They worship a net. They worship just the thing, a fish net. And so he knows that he's talked back to God in a certain sense, and he says, I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I am reproved. And Jehovah answered me and said, this is an important thing to me. He says, write the vision. Important to understand what a vision is. Vision is a word from God. And throughout Scripture, it always means the word of the Lord. Okay? Even in other places where we ascribe to it our own thinking of vision. A vision in Scripture is the word of God. Write the vision. Make it plain upon tables that he may run that reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. So he's saying, it may seem like it's not going to happen because it's tarrying, but it will not tarry. It will come. It will not tarry forever. Behold, his soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him. So he says, I know what they're like, but the just shall live by his faith. Yea, also, because he transgresses by wine, he is a proud man, neither keeps at home, who enlarges his desire as hell and is as death, cannot be satisfied, but gathers unto him all nations and heaps unto him all people.
Shall not all these, the people that he had heaped up to himself, take up a parable against him and a taunting proverb against him and say, and then we get this taunting proverb from those that they had captured, and this proverb, these proverbs come after the judgment that God would put unto them. Woe to him that increases that which is not his. How long? And to him that lades himself with thick clay. Shall they not rise up suddenly that shall bite thee, and awake that shall vex thee? Thou shalt be for booties unto them, because thou hast spoiled many nations. All the remnant of the people shall spoil thee, because of men's blood, and for the violence of the land, of the city, and of all that dwell therein. Woe to him that covets an evil covetousness to his house. And these are against Babylon, but these woes can apply to anyone. That he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. Thou hast consulted shame to thy house by cutting off many people, and hast sinned against thy soul. For the stone shall cry out of the wall, and the beam of the timber shall answer it. Woe to him that builds a town with blood, and establishes a city by iniquity. Behold, is it not of Jehovah of hosts that the people shall labor in the very fire, and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity? For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord, or as the waters cover the sea. Woe unto him that gives his neighbor drink, that puttest thy bottle to him, and makes him drunken also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness. Thou art filled with shame for glory. Drink thou also, and let thy foreskin be uncovered. The cup of Jehovah's right hand shall be turned unto thee, and shameful spewing, vomiting, shall be on thy glory. For the violence of Lebanon shall cover thee, and the spoil of beasts which made them afraid, because of men's blood, and for the violence of the land, of the city, and of all that dwell therein. What profits the graven image that the maker thereof has graven it, the molten image, and a teacher of lies that the maker of his work trusts therein to make dumb idols? Woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is laid over with gold and silver, and there's no breath at all in the midst of it. But Jehovah is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. And that's an important thing for us to remember. Jehovah is in his holy temple. We should keep silent. We have so much noise in our lives that we need to keep silent sometimes. We need to get the noise out of our lives when we come before the Lord. And then finally, I'll read this prayer of Habakkuk's. Habakkuk hears, he questions God, he hears God's response, he questions God, God responds, he's perplexed and questions God again. God gives this long response, and here we have Habakkuk's prayer. The prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet upon Shigionoth. O Jehovah, I have heard thy speech. Okay, so this is after he's heard that, and was afraid. O Jehovah, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years make known. In wrath remember mercy. God came from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. He reviews now all the history, all the things that God had done in Israel's history, seeing his might and strength. His glory covered the heavens, and his earth was full of his praise, and his brightness was as the light. He had horns coming out of his hand, and there was the hiding of his power. Before him went the pestilence, and burning coals went forth at his feet. He stood and measured the earth. He beheld and drove asunder the nations, and the everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills did bow. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cush, in affliction, and the curtains of the land of Midian did tremble. Was Jehovah displeased against the rivers? Was thine anger against the rivers? Was thy wrath against the sea, the Red Sea, that thou didst ride upon thy horses and thy chariots of salvation? Thy bow was made quite naked, according to the oaths of the tribes, even thy word, Selah. Thou didst cleave the earth with rivers. The mountains saw thee, and they trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered his voice and lifted up his hands on high. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation. You remember that? At the light of thine arrows they went, and at the shining of thy glittering spear. Thou dost march through the land in indignation. Thou dost thresh the heathen in anger. Thou wentest forth for the salvation of thy people, even for salvation with thine anointed. Thou woundedst the head out of the house of the wicked by discovering the foundation unto the neck, Selah. Thou didst strike through with his staves the head of his villages. They came out as a whirlwind to scatter me. Their rejoicing was as to devour the poor secretly. Thou didst walk through the sea with thine horses. Thou didst heap, or through the heap of great waters. When I heard, my belly trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled in myself, that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he comes up unto the people, he will invade them with his troops. And this is the conclusion, then. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, that would not be good. Neither shall fruit be in the vines. That would not be good. The labor of the olive shall fail. That doesn't sound good. And the field shall yield no meat. That's not very good. The flocks shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. Very bad conditions. Yet, I will rejoice in Jehovah. I will joy in the God of my salvation. Jehovah God is my strength. He will make my feet like hinds' feet and will make me to walk upon my high places, to the chief singer on my stringed instruments. Habakkuk teaches us that whatever happens around us, the just man lives by faith. Doesn't matter what's going on in the world around us, the just man lives by faith. Let's pray. Our Father,